Our second case for argument this morning is Plastics Engineering v. Liberty Mutual. Mr. Sullivan, good morning.
May it please the Court, my name is John Sullivan. I represent Liberty Mutual in this matter. Liberty Mutual is the appellant and has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. There are two primary issues that were raised by Liberty Mutual in connection with this appeal. The first issue is the question of whether the district court erred in ruling that as a result of the all sums language in certain Liberty Mutual policies, that Liberty Mutual was required to pay for asbestos claims that resulted in bodily injury, even if that bodily injury took place during periods when Plastics Engineering was uninsured or Liberty Mutual had products liability exclusions or had asbestos exclusions. The second issue is the issue of the number of occurrences, and more specifically, whether the district court erred in determining that in making the calculation of number of occurrences, a court looked at, or the court should look from the perspective of the injured person rather than from the perspective of the insured.
There doesn't seem to be a unanimity of authority on this issue, does there? The courts are kind of split, right?
On the number of occurrences issue, Your Honor? There is a split in the case law, but quite frankly, Your Honor, the problem that you run into in this litigation is, and particularly with respect to the Liberty Mutual policies, is that like all insurance contracts or like all insurance contract controversies, the issue depends upon the language of the policy. Liberty Mutual's policy is unique. In looking at the case law that exists dealing with the number of occurrences issue, the only case that I've seen that deals with language similar to the Liberty Mutual policy or identical to the Liberty Mutual policy is the language from is the Third Circuit decision in Liberty Mutual versus Treesdale. The unique aspect of that language is this. Liberty Mutual's policies say in the limits of liability section of the policy that regardless of the number of persons who were injured, for purposes of determining the limits of liability of the Liberty Mutual policies, all bodily injury arising from continuous or repeated exposure to substantially the same general conditions shall be deemed the result of one and the same occurrence. That language was at issue in Treesdale. That language is at issue here. It is language that, not surprisingly, is specific to the Liberty Mutual policies because it was contained in an endorsement in the primary policies and in the umbrella policies, although it's contained in the preprinted policy jacket. Those preprinted policy jackets are not standard across the industry. This is a Liberty Mutual issue. But it is true that courts have struggled looking at different policy language in different contexts to determine the number of occurrences. In case after case, even where different policy language was at issue, courts throughout the country have found that in cases like this, in which a policyholder faces tort liability as a result of mass tort claims involving a defective product, that is a product that contains an inherently dangerous component, and in this case, the inherently dangerous component is asbestos, the claims arise from a single occurrence. And in this particular case, that context makes particular sense when we look at the facts of this case as stipulated by the parties. The facts that were stipulated by the parties were that Plastics Engineering sold asbestos-containing molding compounds from the 1950s until 1983, that those asbestos-containing molding compounds were primarily sold to plastics molding facilities, and as a result, the claims that have been asserted have been principally filed by persons who worked in plastics molding facilities, not Plenco's facilities, the facilities of their customers.
Well, what I guess we're as we are, asked to divine is what Wisconsin law is on this. Isn't that what it amounts to?
That's correct, Your Honor. And there is no Wisconsin case that's addressed this specific policy language, but there is Wisconsin case law that has addressed the general approach that's applied in determining this issue. And in fact, that Wisconsin case law is uniform, and it started with the Olson case, in which the Wisconsin Supreme Court said that the issue to be determined is to look at the issue from the standpoint of the cause of the injuries. That was followed up by the Welcher versus Singer case, in which the court, essentially a Wisconsin Court of Appeals, applied the same test, and subsequently two additional Wisconsin appellate court cases, both of which have dealt with situations that are somewhat analogous to this, but not completely analogous, in that the original cases where this principle originated were automobile accident cases, factually relatively easier cases to address. The case, Wisconsin Electric Power case, involved a 12-year course of injury, which was found to be one occurrence. The Society Insurance case involved a 14-year history of dumping, which was found to be one continuous occurrence.
In comparing those cases to the injury, do they have a series of injuries that occurred along the line of those years? I call them injuries the same way that injuries here. People who were exposed to this over the years accumulated this cumulative disease and then discovered it late, I guess. I don't know how it works. But in those cases that you're comparing it to, did they have a similar situation with along the way different people were exposed or something or other and they found out about their injuries?
The Society Insurance case, I'm sorry, Your Honor, is analogous in that case involves long-term disposal of waste. And so presumably, and in fact ultimately, each of the policies was determined to be triggered, which means that the court was finding that there was property damage that took place in each of those policies. So it is analogous in the sense that the policyholder that was involved in that case was disposing of waste, which would cause property damage in each year. And in a somewhat analogous situation, Plastics was selling asbestos-containing molding compounds, which caused injury to those who were exposed to those molding compounds each year that they were exposed to those to the asbestos.
Well, some of those period long-term things, they have different policies in them. You know, it's like the CERCLA stuff, where there's waste disposal and they discover it, and then there's the cleanup, and then you got to go through a series of years to see when it actually occurred. And I don't know what that's called when you divide them up that way, but they didn't try to do that here.
The issue, I think, and in this case, one reason that there wouldn't have been that division is that Liberty Mutual is the continuous insurer of
except
Plastics.
When they had gaps, I guess.
There was one two-year gap from an umbrella in the first layer umbrella coverage, but for the period from the mid-1950s until this litigation was filed, Liberty Mutual was the insurer of Plastics. So you don't have that level, that type of allocation-type concern in the question of allocating among insurers. What Liberty Mutual is saying with respect to the allocation issue is Liberty Mutual first provided products liability coverage to Plenco in 1968. It's undisputed, because it's stipulated in the facts, that Plenco was selling asbestos-containing molding compounds beginning in the 1950s. It's undisputed because it was stated in the stipulation of facts that people are injured shortly after their first exposure to the asbestos in the molding compounds. So we have a situation in which there really can't be any dispute that there was bodily injury that took place between the period when Plenco first started selling asbestos products in the 50s until 1968, at which point it finally started getting coverage from Liberty Mutual for those claims. In the mid-1980s, really 1988, Liberty Mutual added asbestos exclusions to its policies. The fact that Liberty added asbestos exclusions to its policies didn't change what was going on in the country. People were still being exposed to asbestos. People were still having injury as a result of that exposure to asbestos. Our claim is that for Plenco to say, Liberty Mutual, you should pay 100% of the liability because you provided coverage during some portion of the injury period, is simply inconsistent with the policy language and inconsistent with any sort of fairness consideration.
Well, the dilemma, it seems to me, is that it's all one or the other. It's either, in your case, confined to 1 year with, I guess, the most coverage. I think that's how that works, isn't it? Whatever it is, 10 million, 10.5, something like that, where the primary is 500,000 and the umbrella is 10 million.
The way it works, and Your Honor, there are two different issues that are here, so I want to make sure I'm answering correctly. It is true that as a result of the non-cumulation provision, that if all the claims arise from a single occurrence,
right,
then the maximum that Liberty Mutual could pay is essentially the highest limit that it issued to of the policies it issued to Plastics.
In 1 year, I guess.
In 1 year, that's
yeah,
correct.
You're not adding them all up.
Correct. You would not be stacking
so
those policies.
Whatever year that was, it had 500,000, I guess, per occurrence or something. What was it, 500,000 primary?
In the early primary policies issued by Liberty Mutual.
The one with the $10 million umbrella I'm talking about.
The 10 million umbrella was on top of a 1 million primary because the primary limits went up as time went by.
I see.
The one thing I should clarify, Your Honor, is that the non-cumulation provision is in all of the umbrella policies. It isn't in all of the primary policies. So in the primary policies, there are a number of years where that provision isn't applicable, and in fact, Liberty Mutual has paid full limits under those policies. So the end result of the non-cum, if applied, is that Plenco would have approximately $10.5 million worth of total coverage available to it under the primary policies. Now, that money has already been spent. Liberty has already spent that in defending these claims and in settling these claims.
Now, as far as the defense, which is the other another aspect here, is there. I think they said something like there are thousands of people that are injured or whatever, and hundreds of lawsuits.
Correct, Your Honor.
And each one of those requires a defense.
That's absolutely correct.
And obviously it's a separate expense, I assume, for those that aren't in a group. That is an ongoing obligation, I suppose.
It is an ongoing obligation. And
there's
in fact,
no ceiling on that.
There is no ceiling on the duty to defend. So the policies have a dollar limit for how much they would pay for judgments or settlements. There's no dollar limit for how much an insurance company would pay for defense.
I assume that in itself is pretty high.
It's not in the record, but on a national basis, that probably is running at a 2-to-1 or 1-to-1 ratio in terms of defense to indemnity. So yes, it's a pretty considerable ticket from anyone's standpoint.
Now, Mr. Sullivan, you know, we're looking here at the sort of a bottom line issue about certification to the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
I understand.
And if we read them wrong, that can have adverse consequences on parties in this case, right?
The answer is that absolutely, that if the court makes an incorrect prediction, it it would have a negative impact on the parties. Although the reality is that that's the risk that any litigant faces in any case.
But I recall, this is some years ago, in which I was the author of an opinion on insurance coverage, and the Indiana Supreme, Indiana Supreme Court came down the other way, and people were back in federal court trying to get the original judgment changed to conform with what Indiana law, the Indiana Supreme Court said was the Indiana law. What's the downside for having certification in this case?
I think that the downside from Liberty Mutual's perspective is delay, and delay related to the questions that were raised by Judge Mannion, which is Liberty Mutual is paying 100% of the defense. It's paying 100% of the judgments. If this case is certified to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, there's going to be inevitable delay. There's already, statistically, we can show that the workload of the Wisconsin Supreme Court has increased 20% over the last 7 years. And so there is a delay factor. I understand that the issue that the court is struggling with is the question of, well, if we make the wrong call, aren't the parties here hurt? And that happens all the time. That happens in litigation. It happens in litigation in the Wisconsin state courts, where a judge makes a decision, the court refuses to grant an appeal, and subsequently there is a change in the law in another case, and the parties are stuck with the decision of the court that they were in front of. But Plastics took that risk. Plastics knew that this was a case that involved Wisconsin state law issues. It made the determination that it wanted a federal court to make that call.
Yeah, that's true, Mr. Sullivan. But, of course, it's a party who was successful below that is now asking. So we take that into consideration, the invoking of the federal jurisdiction initially, but perhaps the reality is that it might have ended in federal court in any event. But, I mean, I'm not trying to get into the strategy of Liberty. My concern on this all sums of theory recovery, which you cite to us, Society Insurance and Town of Franklin, as being helpful to us on the triggering issue. But as I read the case, the court didn't have occasion to consider whether they pay for injuries that occurred outside the policy period. So I mean, I understand you're citing the case, but I think factually it doesn't line up with what are purported to be the facts here. And it's for me anyway, this difficulty of trying to read the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which we have this issue all the time, where we have just intermediate court tea leaves from a state, and we don't certify with any sort of frequency in this circuit. I think that's a fair assessment. But the swings here in potential costs as compared to legal fees, and as you alluded to, just seem to me the damage issue is so enormous, aside from the public policy consideration, that I'm not saying the possession arrow for me I've decided points solely towards certification, but it's a pretty compelling case, it seems.
And, Your Honor, I realize that I'm cutting into my rebuttal time.
We've asked a few questions. We'll give you enough time.
If I can attempt to address that issue. In terms of allocation, I can't contest that there is no Wisconsin appellate court that addresses the question of whether the policyholder should pay for bodily injury or property damage that takes place when it doesn't have coverage. And Your Honor is correct that the Society Insurance case specifically said it wasn't addressing that case or that issue. What I would suggest, though, that issue isn't the only issue here, and that the issue in terms of limits of liability and the issue of the non-cumulation provision and Liberty Mutual's specific single occurrence language is language that doesn't have broader implications. It has implications for the parties here, as any decision does, but it doesn't have a broader implication because every situation, and I think if we look at the cases throughout the country, have demonstrated that the courts are sensitive to the particular policy language and the particular factual circumstances in coming to a determination. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Mr. Davis?
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning. Davis, you chose this forum, right? This federal forum?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now you want us to go back and look at, ask the Wisconsin Supreme Court to explain that position?
Yes, Your Honor. We did choose federal court in 2004 when this lawsuit was filed. And at that point, these issues that were before the court now had not been decided. We did realize that they were likely to be issues in this case, of course, even though there were other issues raised. I will tell you, just as a rightly or wrongly, the reason we filed in federal court in the first instance was that there was no doubt in our mind that it would be removed. It would. Maybe we're wrong, but that was certainly our thinking. And we did not, quite frankly, at that point, and this is in our brief, feel that it was in our client's best interest to be in a Sheboygan County circuit court, where these types of cases do attract some publicity and, quite frankly, occasionally new plaintiffs. And that was the rationale. Whether it was we were correct in that concern or not, I don't know, but that was the reason why we did file in federal court in the first instance. And as Your Honor has noted, we were the party that prevailed below. I can tell you we're not forum shopping with respect to this certification issue. It's just that these are issues that have not been decided by a Wisconsin appellate court. They're of enormous importance to my client.
Do you think the Wisconsin Supreme Court, as it's presently constituted, would reach a different decision, would have reached a different decision back 4 years ago?
I don't think it would have reached a different decision. I don't remember when
My point and my question is, regardless of the shift in the Wisconsin Supreme Court over the last several years, the decision would have been the same either side of that.
Oh, absolutely. Johnson Controls was decided in 2003. This case was decided in 2004. We were perfectly happy then with the Wisconsin Supreme Court deciding this. But, you know, I guess I just sort of look at it as Rule 52 provides the Courts of Appeals for the United States Circuit Courts of Appeals the opportunity in appropriate cases to go straight to the horse's mouth, so to speak, where there is, it's not really known how that state's highest court would rule. And of course, this court's role is to predict how that would occur. And if you look at all the factors that this court has articulated with respect to certification, they all support our position on that point. The degree of uncertainty, the matter of public concern. This issue does recur. As we've indicated in our brief, there are a number of trial court decisions where the allocation issue has been directly decided. There's cases all over the country where these issues have been decided. It just so happens that they haven't been decided in Wisconsin. And I think the reason, by the way, for that is probably because there was not nearly as much progressive loss-type cases in Wisconsin until 2003 in the Johnson Controls decision. The Supreme Court has not had an opportunity to address these issues, and I think the Supreme Court, frankly, would welcome the opportunity to do so.
Well, Ms. Davis, we also try to look closely at our sister circuits, and I recognize the Third Circuit wasn't looking at Wisconsin law, but how should we treat the Treesdale case?
Treesdale, we would suggest that the reasoning of Treesdale is contrary to the position that we would take in this case. But I also think it's contrary to the position that the Wisconsin Supreme Court would take. And the reason I say that is Treesdale, basically applied the cause test with respect to the number of occurrence, The Wisconsin Supreme Court has adopted the cause test with respect to the number of occurrences. But the Wisconsin Supreme Court in Olson and Welter has applied that test in a manner that I think would be give a dramatically different outcome than was the case in Treesdale. In Olson and Welter, the courts made clear that you have to look at not only the cause, but whether there's an uninterrupted cause that ultimately results in the injury. They've said that you have to look at whether there's a proximity in time and location with respect to the cause that results in injury. It's not any causative event. You know, there's that old adage about a beating of a butterfly's wings causing a tornado in Texas. You don't look at that with respect to the cause test under Wisconsin law. You look at the immediate cause. And I think that's also plain from the language of the policy, which talks about cause being an exposure to conditions. Treesdale and Liberty Mutual in this case takes the position it's the manufacture and sale of products that constitutes the cause in this case. That's not exposure, Your Honor. And in fact, you know, I did want to address one more thing with respect to certification. That's this issue of delay, which is the primary concern that Mr. Sullivan has raised. In the first place, I think that this case probably could get on before the Wisconsin Supreme Court in this term and be decided this term. In fact, they, I think, conceded that in their brief. So I don't know, you know, if there'd be much delay, if any, with respect to certification. The other point I guess I would make is they defended and paid on these claims in full for 16 years before raising this issue back in 2004. And then we filed suit to once they threatened to withdraw part of their defense and indemnity payments. They could have teed this issue up, you know, 16 years ago and didn't do it. So I think whatever delay that might be out there is certainly the adverse consequences of that are outweighed by the benefits of a certification. So turning to the merits, which of course are also, you know, are before the court at this point, I want to start with allocation. And as the court has indicated with respect to the questioning of Mr. Sullivan, there are two separate analyses with respect to allocation. And that's very important, I think, to keep in mind. One is defense costs, and one is indemnity payments. In both cases, Liberty Mutual is basically saying that simply because a party suffers bodily injury, it's within our policy period. If it so happens that claimant, that injury may have also occurred outside the policy period, we can curtail our defense or curtail the payments that we have to make. And I think that's contrary to the language of the policy, as well as how I believe Wisconsin has at least suggested it would decide this issue. Start with defense costs. And the starting point, of course, is the language of the policy, which requires Liberty Mutual to defend any suit seeking damages in which bodily injury is alleged, bodily injury being defined as injury within the policy period. But the policy does not provide for a partial defense of a suit or that portion of a suit alleging injury within the policy period. It requires that Liberty Mutual defend any suit, period. And that means the whole suit. And that's exactly what the Wisconsin courts have held in quite a number of cases, that there's no way to divvy up a duty to defend between covered and uncovered portions of a lawsuit. The strong policy rationale behind that is articulated in the Gruby v. Don case, which says, and this is from Gruby, it is impossible to determine upon which claim the plaintiff may recover until the action is completed. Second, it ensures that the insured will have a coherent, coordinated defense aimed at defeating all of the claims. Third, insurance contracts are contracts of adhesion, allowing the insured little choice in adding, eliminating, or writing standard provisions. That's from a Wisconsin Court of Appeals decision. Wisconsin does also have the duty to defend is indivisible. So I think it's pretty plain. I don't think there's an issue at all with respect to the there is a duty to defend the whole suit and to pay all defense costs with respect to these asbestos claims. Now, let me turn now to the indemnity payments, the settlements or judgments that Liberty Mutual or that Plinko is paying with respect to these claimants in which it is seeking indemnification. Again, we start with the language of the policy, which requires Liberty Mutual to indemnify Plinko for all sums that Plinko must pay as damages because of bodily injury. Now, while bodily injury is defined as an injury which takes place within the policy period, the fact is whatever settlements or judgments Plinko pays is being paid because of that injury. If there's no injury within the policy period, there's no coverage. We don't deny that. However, whether that injury also takes place in part outside the policy period is irrelevant. It's pretty clear from this language, I think, that the requirement of bodily injury being within the policy period is what is called the triggering event. It tells you whether the policy applies at all. That's a separate inquiry as to how much you pay once that triggering event occurs. And that the answer to that question is the language that says we'll pay all sums. At a minimum, I think there's an ambiguity with that language, as a number of courts have held. And, of course, any ambiguity under Wisconsin law is construed in favor of the insured, not the insurer who wrote the policies. It would have been very easy for Liberty Mutual to write a policy that said Liberty Mutual is required to identify Plinko for that portion, for some pro rata share of sums paid because of bodily injury, but they didn't. By the way, the Society Insurance case, I think, actually speaks indirectly to this issue, and I think it supports Plinko's position. In that case, you had an environmental contamination going from the 1940s through the present, and the court basically said that the insurer had to pay up to its limits for all policies that were in effect, which were from 1972 through 1986. It didn't talk about any pro rata share or anything along those lines. You're allowed to stack coverage.
Yeah, but you agree it didn't address injuries outside the policy period.
Well, it basically said you have to pay up to your limits, which I think the holding of that case, and that basically is that there was not going to be a pro rata allocation of that. They did say we're not addressing allocation in a footnote. And they seem to think or seem to suggest in that footnote that by allocation they meant between multiple insurers. And that's sort of a slightly different inquiry. We don't have multiple insurers in this case. I think in terms of trying to voice some portion on the insured, as I read Society Insurance, they were not going to allow that to happen. Just moving on with the merits, I want to talk a little bit about the non-cumulation provision, which is the second major issue in this case. And there really are two issues or two reasons why we believe that the non-cumulation provision would not apply in this case. One is because, and we've addressed this a few minutes ago with respect to one of your questions, Judge Flom, but it's because each asbestos claim is a separate occurrence, as that term is defined in the policy. And if that's the case, you never really hit the limits that would with respect to any given policy year. So, we don't care if the non-cum provision is valid if we have separate occurrences. But the second reason is that we believe that the provision itself is invalid under WISSTAT Section 631.43. With respect to the number of occurrences, if each claimant's injury is considered a separate occurrence, then the non-cum clause will not come into play for most of, not all, asbestos claims at issue. They just never hit that limit. Once again, the starting point with that analysis is the language of the policy. An occurrence is defined to mean it's defined a little bit differently, in some of the different policies over the years. But just to quote from one of the Liberty Mutual policies, it means an accident, including continuous or repeated exposure to conditions which results in bodily injury, neither expected nor intended from the standpoint of the insured. I think this definition fits much better with Plinko's theory of occurrence than Liberty Mutual's. Manufacture and sale of a product was not an accident. It's not even really an event, as that term has been defined. And that there's a case from the California Court of Appeals we've cited very recently that basically got into that analysis, the London Market case. And again, as I indicated earlier, I think that more pointedly, the language of the policy contemplates, as does Wisconsin law, that it is the immediate cause of injury, the exposure to asbestos, that is considered an occurrence. And the Wisconsin courts have again made it clear that if you have an interruption or something that's separate in time from some causative event somewhere down the chain and the ultimate injury, you don't have one single occurrence. And that's really what happened here. The manufacture and sale of asbestos was not the exposure that caused the injury. It was each claimant's exposure, each time they came into contact with a product. That was the exposure, and that's the occurrence. I'll grant you that each claimant can or was exposed multiple times to these products over a course of years. And I think that's what fits within the definition of occurrence in the policy.
Well, there are probably still a lot of plaintiffs out there that haven't, or potential plaintiffs,
sure.
I should say. So this is I guess that's the problem here, is it's either, from their point of view, confined to what amounts to 1 year, the maximum, I think, whatever that is, versus, I guess it goes to the policy limits. What is it, $70 million or something?
$73 million in excess limits.
Yeah, in excess limits, in addition to all of the costs of defense. So it's
right.
A pretty big number.
Huge dollars at stake here, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
And these cases do come in. I don't know about every day, but they come in on a very regular basis.
I assume that, and I also assume that it's that even with those high limits, the claims exceed that.
The claims rarely exceed the limits. Each individual claim.
I don't mean each individual. I mean cumulatively.
We're not there yet.
Well, I don't want to be cynical, but there's a lot of potential.
Sure.
People who've been exposed who, even without demonstrable injury, I don't know where they are right now with asbestos,
right.
Whether when you get to file a claim versus exposure versus a diagnosis, I don't know what it is, but it's a lot of money. So
right.
that's why I guess we're concerned with getting this right according to the law that's being applied.
And I'll tell you, there's a lot more claims like that, not just with respect to Plinko, but a lot of insureds.
Right.
These are
When does it seep back to the company? They describe this as a family-owned company, I believe, or something or other.
Well,
anyway, I don't know. Is it a public company?
It's not. It is a family-owned.
Yeah. At some point when these sums are exhausted, you go back to somebody else.
Right. Well, they've paid $14.5 million or
so in
judgments or settlements. Again, they have 70-some-odd million dollars in limits. And defense costs don't erode limits. So the defense costs are separate from all of that. A lot of these cases, the defense costs
exceed
are way more than the judgments or settlements. I mean, that's part of what this type of litigation is all about, frankly, in some of these cases. I also just want to turn real briefly to the other legal issue with respect to the non-cum clause, and that's the validity of the provision itself under WSDAT 631.43. The only reason that's really been advanced that I think is even, you know, the reason that the district court ruled against us on this issue is this notion of consecutive versus concurrent policies. And the idea that if it only applies where there are two policies in the same time frame or same policy period, where they both promise to indemnify for the same loss, then that statute comes into play. But it wouldn't come into play where you've got consecutive policies over a number of years. There's really nothing in the statute that would allow that type of limitation. I think that type of limitation would be contrary to the policy behind the statute, which has been articulated in a number of Wisconsin decisions. And those decisions, by the way, include decisions where these single limit provisions do exist in a slightly different format than the non-cumulation clause. But again, they're not limited to other insurance provisions, and they're not they do apply to single limit type provisions. And whenever basically the Wisconsin legislature has made a policy determination that when an insured buys insurance, they're entitled to it. And then you can't slip in a provision that basically says that we're going to pigeonhole all your coverage into just one policy where you've paid premiums for multiple policies over multiple years. So if there's no further questions, I have nothing further to add. Thank you, Your Honor.
Sullivan?
Your Honors, I recognize one of the issues that is concerning the panel is the issue of certification. And I do think it's important, and I know I've hit this point in terms of Plinko having made the determination to sue in federal court and to entrust the federal courts with this determination. Plinko today says, we chose federal court because they were forum shopping. They didn't want to be in Sheboygan County. They may have looked at it and said, well, Liberty Mutual may be in a position that it's likely to remove, but that's just speculation.
Given the district court's opinion, you're not going to do any worse, I don't think, are you?
I hope not.
Well, I mean, if it goes to Wisconsin, that's what I'm saying. I mean, this is, you know, we have to do anything, we have to reverse the district court to give you any break.
So far, Your Honor, I've lost out of 2 out of 3 issues, and I'm certainly hoping to do better either before this court or before the Wisconsin Supreme Court if this court makes the determination to send it to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I recognize that there's a concern about the dollars that are at issue, and those are dollars that are of concern to both Liberty Mutual and to Plastics. One of the issues that the court raised was the issue of, well, is this ultimately all going to end up in Plastics' lap? We're dealing today with the primary coverage that was issued by Liberty and the first-level excess coverage. There's a whole lot of other coverage that Plastics bought over time from other insurers. They don't happen to be before the court, and the reason is because we're not at a point where their limits are threatened. An issue has been raised as to, well, is there any harm to Liberty if there's a delay because we were defending for a long period of time? And the quick answer, and I see that I'm out of time.
You have time to answer, Mr. Sullivan.
Is when the claims first came in the door, Liberty Mutual didn't look at the claims and say, looking at the first claim, we're going to exceed our policy limits. As time goes by and you see the claims continue and that companies like Plastics that used to be marginal defendants become target defendants, then you see that those policy limits are going to be exposed. And it's a responsible thing for an insurance company to do at that point to say, this is an issue that you're going to face and we're putting you on notice of that.
Mr. Sullivan, would your view be then if the issue is likely to reoccur down the road? I mean, our courts?
The answer is I'm not sure, and the reason I say that is asbestos litigation has been around since Burrell versus Fiberboard, which I think was 1975, and the issue has never gone to the Wisconsin Appellate Court on allocation in over 30 years. In terms of pollution cases, Superfund was passed on December 11th of 1980, so we're 27 years past Superfund. Net allocation has never gone to a Wisconsin appellate court. With respect to the single occurrence of non-cum, there are issues that have gone to the Wisconsin courts, appellate courts, but they've always addressed different policy language from the language that we're dealing with here. So my answer on the number of occurrences in non-cum is that issue isn't going to recur unless you deal, you know, unless you're dealing with this specific policy language. And looking through the case law, other than Treesdale, I don't know of a case that's dealt with the same policy language in a similar context.
Well, that's what my research shows, too. Thank you, Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you for your time, Your Honors.
Davis, thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.